please the court. My name is Fred Roth. I'm here representing the appellant, who is Mervyn Wolf, who is seated at the table to my left. It please the court. This case is here because it is alleged by Mr. Wolf that his constitutional rights were violated by the conspiracy of the defendants who conspired to publish in a campaign ad for the state's attorney a confirmation of a private and confidential investigation being conducted by the ARDC. We believe that he has a constitutional right under Article 1, the Bill of Rights, to the Illinois Constitution, Section 12, which states...
What's Article 1 of the Bill of Rights? What are you talking about?
The Illinois Constitution. It's the Illinois Constitution.
Oh, you're talking about the Illinois Constitution.
Yes, yes, I'm sorry.
So where's his federal right not to have this information published?
It's his belief that under the 14th Amendment that he has a right to due process.
But what due process? I don't understand how that all adds up, because it's certainly clear that one needs to show more than the fact that a state law has been violated to show that the federal, some federal constitutional right has been violated. And sometimes people might say, well, there happens to be an overlap between federal law and state law, or sometimes there are processes, you know, so if you are appealing a denial of welfare benefits, you get to have a hearing and explain why you're entitled to them, and so on, but I don't see where there is anything that suggests that just because Illinois treats ARDC complaints in a certain way means that there's a federal right. And in fact, the case of Paul versus Davis makes me think that maybe there is no such federal right.
Well, the right of privacy is the right that he has alleged was violated.
Let me put Judge Wood's question a little differently. If there were no allegation of a state law violation, would you still be arguing that your 14th Amendment rights had been infringed?
We would, on the basis of the claim to the right of privacy, as recognized.
What right of privacy is there? I mean, Paul versus Davis says you have not stated a claim if local merchants, you know, and the state publishes some list of shoplifters and deadbeats, you know, information that people don't like having said about them, especially if it happens to be an error.
Right.
But Paul versus Davis says there is no federal constitutional claim there stated. So why is this case different?
This is different for a number of reasons. We're dealing with the state's attorney. We're dealing with the ARDC.
Why does it matter who the publisher is if there's no federal constitutional privacy right recognized in the content of the information?
Well, the content of this information they only had access to because of their public positions, and they're claiming that they have qualified immunity.
All right, so that's
their positions.
State law has some limitations on how this information is disseminated, but
right.
Why does that transform into the kind of, you know, I mean, there are a lot of state torts, breach of you know, privacy of some sort, maybe one of them, that are perfectly good torts, but they aren't federal constitutional violations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the federal constitutional right that he's claiming is based upon a right of privacy.
But describe describe to me your understanding of what this federal right to privacy is. I'm certainly familiar with the whole area of reproductive rights. He's certainly not there. You know, the right to have, you know, German taught to your children. There are some federal so-called privacy rights under what's called substantive due process. Which one is he talking about?
He's talking about the general rule of privacy and confidentiality to protect his reputation.
All right. So that's Paul versus Davis again. Can you cite me a case from the Supreme Court of the United States that has recognized the type of right he's pursuing?
I cannot. It arises under the Illinois Supreme Court decision In re Matan, which is on page 8 of our brief, where the court explained that the purpose underlying the general rule of privacy and confidentiality referring to Rule 766, is to protect an attorney's reputation for honesty and integrity from the irreparable harm that might result if a publicly announced disciplinary investigation or charge later proved to be without substance. In this instance, the state's attorney, with information gained only because of his position as state's attorney, put an ad, a campaign ad, into the newspaper saying that there are certain experiences that my opponent, Mr. Wolf, who was his opponent in the election for state's attorney, has had and I have not had. And he lists one of those.
Let me come at this a somewhat different way. I mean, the Supreme Court of the United States in recent years has zealously protected the First Amendment right of people to publish and all sorts of things. So you'll recall the Citizens United case. It had to do with the First Amendment right of corporations to speak and to have this movie about Hillary Clinton out there, which was filled with scurrilous material, and the court actually mentions that in passing. In the Stevens case, they said there's a First Amendment right to have these terrible crusher videos showing women in high heels killing small animals. I mean, how, in the light of that understanding of the First Amendment, does this exceed those kinds of things?
Well, we could not find a case where
The cases that run the other direction, maybe they're not exactly the same. I understand that, but
we could not find a case that mirrored the kind of facts here where there was cooperation between regulatory authorities who publicly announced in a campaign ad that someone is being investigated. Now, the rights of that person being affected.
Well, when the Justice Department reports that they're conducting an investigation of British Petroleum for criminal violations, is that violating the right of privacy of British Petroleum or its
I don't think
executives?
That's violating.
Why? What's the difference?
Well, the difference here is that there's a specific rule put in place by the Supreme Court of Illinois.
No, but I asked you at the beginning whether your 14th Amendment argument was dependent on the existence of a state law, and you said no, that you had a federal right of privacy unrelated to state law.
Well,
now you're retreating to state law. You're saying because there's some specific rule protecting the confidentiality of these investigations, there's a violation, or maybe a violation of state law. But we're interested in whether you think there's a freestanding federal right of information privacy of people who are under investigation.
Well, under the concept of equal protection in the 14th Amendment, we think the federal...
Then what's the difference with my BP example? Maybe it's a difference of corporation, but the federal government constantly announcing investigations and, you know, intention to seek seek indictments and so on.
Well, there's a difference when the federal agencies announce that and are not prohibited in any such way from doing
so. You just aren't tracking. Mm-hmm. You're insisting, you're saying that your federal argument depends on the existence of a state rule.
Or a constitutional right under the state
constitution. But some state legislative or constitutional right? You're tying your federal right to the state right.
Correct.
But you said at the outset you weren't, that there was a freestanding federal constitutional right that didn't depend on any state laws.
Well, I mentioned the right of privacy, and I mentioned equal protection as federal rights, and that those federal rights can be used to enforce rights within a state.
Are you telling us, Mr. Roth, that if the Illinois Supreme Court decided to amend Rule 766, that the federal constitution would prohibit it from doing so? If they chose to relax the confidentiality obligations of state law, that the federal constitution would prevent them from doing so?
No. No.
Okay.
No, the state rule implemented by the Supreme Court actually allows for confirmation of investigations, but only with their consent. 766B1 says that if
What if they created an exception for some kind of public emergency?
If the Supreme Court did that?
Yeah, so we've got a big problem here. We've got an attorney who's been on a crime spree, and we're investigating him, and we want the public to be aware that they shouldn't be doing business with the guy. Does the federal constitution prohibit that?
No. The rule already allows for that if they go to the Supreme Court and get permission to make the disclosure of the investigation, of the existence of the investigation. The rule allows for that. Quote,
so if the defendants had gotten permission from the Illinois Supreme Court, you wouldn't have a claim?
We wouldn't be here.
That's quite a constitutional right you're describing, I have to say. Doesn't seem to be worth much.
Well, if there is no constitutional right to this, that will be informative for all of us in this profession as to what we can say about all the 5,894 investigations that were supposedly confidential and private, according to their response.
As a matter of federal law, yes. How the Illinois Supreme Court might respond to widespread violations of those rules is another question.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Roth. Ms. Rhodes?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Susan Frederick Rhodes, and I represent the ARDC defendants, Peter Rotzkoff and Denise Lynn Church. There's no denying that the purpose of Supreme Court Rule 766 is to afford privacy and confidentiality in the investigative process. It protects not only the attorney who's the subject of the investigation, but it also protects the privacy and confidentiality of the complaining witness, of the integrity of the disciplinary system. And the appellant has not shown that the rule was designed to afford him
a cause of action
for a breach of privacy and confidentiality.
So following up on where Judge Hamilton just was, suppose ARDC is conducting an investigation, and I'll give you two people who supposedly, in my hypothetical, violate that obligation of confidentiality. One is a lawyer who is giving information to ARDC in the course of the investigation, and the other is a non-lawyer, layperson, but somebody who ARDC has decided they need to talk to, perhaps a former client, perhaps, you know, anybody, somebody who's a non-lawyer. What sanctions or what structure is available for ARDC to enforce this confidentiality obligation?
None.
Nothing.
No.
So,
you know, in the course,
he just says, "We hope you'll keep this confidential," and that's it.
The rule is directed to the ARDC and its staff. Say someone,
so you might fire a staff person who leaked to the press? Or?
That's a possibility. But if any member of the public called the office of the ARDC and asked, is this attorney under investigation, that information cannot be revealed or confirmed one way or the other.
But if somebody's out in the field making calls, though, and talking to people who actually have information about the facts, that's the situation. You can't keep that secret, can you?
No, because it could violate those persons' First Amendment rights, as has been held in several other states that have tried to enforce similar disciplinary rules about confidentiality
against
other attorneys or private parties. Mm-hmm. There has never been a case in Illinois that has gone that way.
So if one of those, just to follow up and tie it back to this case, if one of the people contacted about, you know, Lawyer Smith, decided, boy, this is kind of interesting. Obviously, you know, maybe there's something going on. They could call up their local newspaper or talk to Lawyer Smith's opponent in a political campaign or do anything else they wanted to do.
Exactly. And the rule also gives the Illinois Supreme Court the discretion to release any private or confidential information in the interests of justice, Subsection B1 says, in the interests of the public and the legal profession, and subsection B2 says, in the interests of justice. It doesn't give any specific directives or limitations on the Supreme Court's discretion. And for that reason, it falls outside of those cases that create a federally protected liberty or property interest. And the appellant concedes in his brief that in order to create a constitutionally protected liberty or property interest, a state regulation has to place those substantive limits on official discretion and include specific directives to the decision maker as to how that discretion is going to be exercised. And Supreme Court rule here gives the Illinois Supreme Court the total discretion. It gives
Ms. Rhodes, are you suggesting that if Rule 766 were more specific, that it would be enforceable under the federal Constitution?
I suppose that if it was written in such a way that it said the Illinois Supreme Court can only release confidential information under these specific guidelines, A, B, C, D, E, and if it provided...
And that would be what federal constitutional right that would come into play if that
due process.
That's a very bad concession.
You don't want to go there.
No. That doesn't make any sense, right? You're saying if you violate the state law, you violate federal law automatically. What sense does that make?
No. I don't mean to say that. What's happened here is that the district court dismissed the complaint.
Even your opponent agrees that if there weren't this Supreme Court rule, he wouldn't have a federal case.
Right. And the district court did...
It's a federal case. Isn't it a state case?
...did make the finding that it was his burden to show that he had a federal right. He didn't meet his burden. And for that reason, one of the reasons that the case was dismissed. And we would ask this court to affirm the dismissal of the complaint. Thank you.
Mr. Chrysler, I think you have a moment.
Thank you, Your Honor. Brian Chrysler for the appellant, Barry Schaefer. I think what's been pretty clear here is that there is no federal case. This is a claim that belongs in state court. It's an Illinois Supreme Court rule that's trying to be enforced through the federal courts. And it's actually been through state court already, and the court dismissed it for failure to state a claim. So we are here today to basically discuss application.
So you didn't even get as far as res judicata in this case? Or what?
No, we did not.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He was granted leave to replead, and he did not, and immediately filed this case.
Why does everybody have a different lawyer in this case? All the arguments are the same. Why don't you get together, have one lawyer?
Probably
one brief. One lawyer, one brief, right?
The insurance carrier.
There's no conflict between the parties, is there? The defendant?
There's probably not, Judge. You're right. It would be probably efficient, probably in the best interest of the clients, and maybe we could structure that better in the future.
Presumably this case is unlikely to come up again.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is the last we'll hear of it.
Okay, well, thank you very
much.
So do you have anything further, Mr. Roth? I mean, your time ran out, but we'll give you a minute.
Based upon the response arguments, I think it's important to know that this case has not been in state court. What I believe he is referring to is that Mr. Wolf filed a petition to have the special appointment of a prosecutor for prosecution of what he alleged to have been a conflict of interest on the part of the state's attorney for failing to take any actions against others for crimes that have been committed. That is not this case, and there is no res judicata that's been raised for the reason that that case is totally opposite and different than this case. But if I heard correctly from the representative, the attorney here for the ARDC, that the rule only applies solely to the staff of the ARDC. Staff of the ARDC in this case that informed and even enlisted the assistance of the state's attorney, and it is in his capacity as state's attorney that he found out about this investigation, and therefore he should be
How are they supposed to do investigations, though, without getting information from people and explaining what they're doing?
Well, I'm not...
That's not a problem, is it?
It's not a problem to find out facts without telling who the target is. No, it's not.
well, you're allowed to tell who the target is, right?
In a ARDC investigation, yeah. I'm not certain you can.
How could you possibly find out relevant facts if you didn't say, you know, we are investigating a specific person? I mean, people aren't supposed to just sit there and opine generally about the world.
No, but they can be asked questions for answers, both in writing and verbally, that don't even disclose who is the target of the
investigation. That's some of the questions, but is it your position that there's never a question that's going to require revealing the person's name?
Well, if it's under the rule that you must get permission from the Supreme Court to confirm an investigation, And in this instance, the state's attorney put it in an advertisement approved by him with his picture saying, this is a fact.
We know. Yeah.
There's a difference between saying this is a fact of an investigation and someone being asked questions who suspects.
Our questions are directed not with respect to Schaefer, but with respect to the ARDC staff, who you seem to be suggesting that it's a terrible thing that in conducting the investigation they identified to the people from whom they were seeking information who the target of the investigation was, and that I think is what troubles at least me.
Well, if this court can help clarify, based on the admissions made here today, that no attorneys outside the staff attorneys at the ARDC are covered by this rule, that will clear it up as far as we're concerned.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Roth and Ms. Rhodes. Mr.